5. Maddie and Brewster appeared at the same time, in the living room of their home, in a seated position next to each other, 3 feet off the ground. They fell instantly, hit the floor hard, and lay there, writhing in pain, struggling to regain their breath.
"What the hell?"
Maddie croaked. Brewster coughed and rolled over on his side.
"Are we back home?"
"I don't know how, but yeah."
Everything looked exactly as it had when they'd left, complete with their frozen parents standing in the middle of the room. The twins struggled up onto their hands and knees.
"What do you do that for?"
Brewster asked. Maddie scuttled like an injured crab across the room to the window.
"Mom said to use it if we were in bad trouble. 3 men we didn't know were about to put us on a plane, which sounds like pretty bad trouble to me." "Aw, man, they still have our phones."
"That's what you're worried about?"
"It's one of the things I'm worried about."
Maddie shoved the drapes aside, looked out the window, then drew back as if the curtain burned her hand.
"What?"
Brewster asked. Maddie said nothing, instead pushing the curtain aside much more slowly and by a smaller amount this time to peer cautiously out the window again. Brewster joined her at the window. The agent's rented SUV was parked on the street, exactly where it had been before. Murphy, Miller, and Sadler stood around the car, but they didn't approach the house. Instead, they watched as Maddie and Brewster reluctantly climbed into the back seat. The twins watched themselves hand over their phones, then get into the SUV, followed by the 2 federal agents and the civilian consultant.
"Look," Brewster said. "There are phones. Maybe you could go ask for them back."
"Shut up."
As the other them drove away, Brewster and Maddie stepped back from the window and sat down on the couch, looking at their frozen parents. After some silent contemplation, Brewster said,
"The necklaces took us someplace safe. Mom said that if we were in trouble, breaking the necklaces would help make us safe. We broke them, and we ended up back at home, in the moment right after we'd left."
"Yeah. The question is, how did that happen, and how did she know it happened?"
Maddie looked down at the pendant hanging around her neck, then hastily grabbed it and held it up for a closer look.
"And how did this happen?"
The wizard hat pendant she held in her hand was unbroken. Brewster checked his own and found it unbroken as well.
"This can't be real."
"It is,"
Maddie said.
"But it can't be."
"But it is. The proof's right in front of us. What'll it take to convince you? Would you like to poke Dad in the eye a few more times?"
"But it doesn't make any sense."
"I'm not saying it does."
"Yeah, I know. You're right. I just don't understand any of this."
"Neither do I, Brewster. I mean, what is it we're even dealing with? Is it magic? Is it science? Is it a little of both?"
"Arthur C. Clarke said that any truly advanced technology would look like magic."
Maddie turned and stared at her brother, mulling over his words.
"You know what, Brewster? That was no help at all."
"Sorry.
You just told me that one thing it might be is indistinguishable from another thing it might be."
"I know, I said I'm sorry."
Maddie shook her head.
"No, I'm sorry. We're both upset, and I'm taking it out on you. Maybe we should call Aunt Britt like we were going to do before the cops showed up. She might be able to explain all of this."
Brewster thought for several seconds before answering.
"We've known Aunt Britt our whole lives, right?"
"Yeah."
"So either she doesn't know about any of this stuff, and she'll think we're crazy, or she does know. She's been hiding it from us since we were babies, and we can't trust her to tell us the whole truth now. Either way, we're dragging her into our problems, including the federal agents who want to take us into custody."
"I see what you mean. If she's part of the problem, we don't want her involved. If she isn't, we don't want to involve her."
Maddie stood up.
"Looks like we have to go find some answers."
"Do you think it's wise to leave the house?"
"Do you think it's wise to stay here?"
"Good point."
Brewster stood up, then turned to look at Gwen and Martin.
"We can't just leave them here like this, though, can we? What if someone breaks in?"
"No, You're right. What should we do with them? We can't help them. Maybe we should at least hide them?
After an amount of conversation that Brewster thought was too little and Maddie thought was too much, they carefully turned Gwen around and tilted her back. Brewster held her up off the floor by her shoulders while Maddie lifted her ankles. Gwen remained perfectly rigid as her children carried her down the stairs into the rec room. The kids tried to do the same with Martin, but he weighed considerably more than Gwen. Maddie, walking backward while gripping her father's ankles like a wheelbarrow, managed to walk down the first few stairs without incident. But Brewster made the mistake of gripping Martin's shoulders underhand. As Martin's body tilted downward, his shoulders rotated slightly, loosening Brewster's grip and decreasing his leverage, until Martin slipped out of Brewster's hands. Martin's upper body fell. His shoulders slammed down on the edge of the top step. His joints remained as stiff as if he were carved from wood. The impact went through his body and into Maddie's hands. His weight shifted from hanging straight down in his children's hands to wanting to slide down the stairs. The combination of the jolt, the weight shift, and the surprise of seeing her brother drop their father caused Maddie also to let go. Maddie saw Martin sliding down the stairs toward her. She braced herself in hopes of blocking his descent, but he already had some momentum. He ran into her and never even slowed down. Instead, he swept Maddie's feet out from under her, causing her to fall on top of him. Maddie gripped her father's shirt and held on like she was on a sled as they barreled down the stairs and onto the landing below. Brewster watched the entire disaster unfold from above, powerless to stop it. As Martin slid to a stop, Maddie let go and rolled onto the floor, eyes shut tight, teeth gritted, but making no sound.
"You okay?"
Brewster shouted. Maddie rolled from side to side, her face contorted but still silent. Brewster ran down the stairs, nearly falling himself as he rushed to his sister's side.
Maddie, what's wrong? Where does it hurt?"
He knelt down over his sister, studying her face for any clue of what was wrong. It quickly became obvious that she couldn't breathe because she was laughing too hard. When they'd both stopped laughing, they got to work. After a few minutes of intense effort, two mannequins were naked, and their parents, still stuck in the same poses, were disguised as Darth Vader and Kylo Ren. Maddie said,
"I don't know how Mom would like wearing the Kylo Ren costume."
"So, what do you think we should do now?"
Maddie looked around.
"We have to get out of here. The agents could be back any second."
"Why would they come back here? Is that the logical thing to do after the two kids you took into custody disappear into thin air?"
"Is there a logical thing to do after something impossible happens? No. So there's no telling what they'll do, which means they might come back here. We have to go."
"How, Maddie? How are we gonna go? We won't get far on foot. We need to think."
"No, Brewster, we need to do something."
"Thinking is doing something.
Not the way you do it."
Maddie started up the stairs.
"We'll take one of the cars. Where are Dad's keys?"
"Wait, no, Maddie, that's a terrible idea."
"No, it isn't."
"Yes, it is. I don't have a license, just a learner's permit."
"You're not driving."
"You don't have your license either."
"So, I'm just as qualified as you are."
"No, Maddie, come on now. Who says you get to drive?"
"Brewster, just a few seconds ago, you said that taking a car was a terrible idea. Are you really going to argue with me over which one of us gets to drive?"
"Hey, I never noticed that the speed limit drops to 35 here,"
Maddie said.
Brewster said, "Keep your eyes on the road."
"I am. The sign's right next to the road."
"But it's not in the road, is it? Keep your eyes on the road."
"Fine, whatever. Worrywart."
"You're mocking me for not wanting to die in a car accident?"
"I'm mocking you for being a worrywart."
"I'm not a worrywart."
"Brewster, you're panicking, and you're just a passenger. I'm the one driving without a license. Do I look concerned?"
"No, you don't, and you should. You really should. That's why I'm panicking."
"Whatever. Just keep a lookout for our turn, would you?"
"Sure. I'm risking my life to go someplace. I might as well make sure we get there. Hey, are we sure the car has enough charge? Did you even look?"
"Yes, it was like the first thing I checked, okay?"
Maddie looked at the gauge.
"The car has a full charge.
Dad must have just topped it off.
Brewster scanned the road ahead, brow furrowed. Then he cocked his head to one side and asked,
Manny, have you ever seen Dad charge the car? I can't remember ever seeing Dad charge up the car.
Matty thought for several seconds. No, I don't remember ever seeing him charge the car. Or Mom. Any car, now that I think about it. I've never noticed either of them charging or putting gas in any car. That's weird, right?
Yeah, that's weird. Hey, I think that's where we're going.
Matty steered the car into an unmarked entrance of a nondescript office park.
Do you remember which office it was?
Brewster shook his head.
We came here once when we were 10. I'm surprised we're in the right part of town.
They drove slowly through the industrial park, reading the signs on the glass doors. Some were painted on in simple sans serif lettering. Some were colorful paper signs made up entirely of fonts that came for free on any Windows PC and were taped to the inside of the glass. A few were spelled out in the kind of reflective letter stickers one might use to put registration numbers on a fishing boat. All of the signs were small and hard to read from a moving car. The large rollaway doors held no parking signs, but no other markings aside from dents, scrapes, and streaks of tire rubber.
I think this is the wrong place, Brewster said. I'm sure of it, in fact.
Why?
Because we're looking for the back entrance to a theme park.
The hidden back entrance.
Yeah, but we just went through an intersection. I could see out in all four directions, and I didn't see any park. I didn't see a fence, a wall, the back of a big building, nothing. Just more roads and more of these office buildings.
I don't know, Brew. I think this is where Dad took us.
I thought so too, but I don't see how it can be.
Maybe the park's underground or something. How should I know?
Maybe we should ask directions.
Matty snorted.
Yeah, great idea. Pardon me, my good man, we're just two teenagers out for an unlicensed drive, which is certainly not weird. Can you please direct us to the secret entrance to the historical theme park that the employees aren't allowed to talk about?
She drummed her fingers on the steering wheel.
Hey, Brewster? Has anybody other than Mom and Dad ever mentioned the park to you?
No, but you just said why. They're not allowed to.
The employees aren't allowed to? But nobody's ever mentioned it to me. Other kids? Adults? Our history teachers? You'd think someone would have said something about it. There'd at least be commercials for it somewhere.
What are you saying?
That there's no park?
Matty, we've been there.
I'm just saying, it's crazy that we've never heard of it other than from Mom and Dad.
Yeah, that is weird. But it's only like the fifth weirdest thing about today.
So far.
I don't see how things could get any weirder at this point.
One of the large metal loading doors started to roll open as they approached. They drove past and Matty glanced inside, idly curious as to what kind of business occupied the space. She stomped on the brake pedal. The car lurched to a stop with a chirp from the tires. Brewster said,
What is your problem?
Matty said,
That's it.
What's what?
There, that's the rear entrance.
It can't be. We're in the middle of the office complex. Physically, it isn't.
Brewster trailed off as he looked into the open loading door. He and Matty gaped at the empty interior, holding nothing but a framed poster for the Prestige, a metal door, and a smartphone taped to the wall.
This is the place,
Matty said.
I agree, but it can't be,
Brewster said as Matty pulled the car into the building. The door closed behind them and the lights came on.
I agree, but it is.
They got out of the car and walked to the metal door. Matty touched the screen of the smartphone. It lit up, displaying 2326-4-6-1896. Matty said,
It's a time and a date.
Brewster shook his head.
That can't be right. Maybe it's a combination, disguised as a time and a date. But wait. No, this can't be the rear entrance to a theater, let alone a theme park. We've seen all four sides of this building, driven almost a full lap.
Maddie said. Let's see if you're right. She tried to turn the handle, but it wouldn't move.
Keys.
Rooster said.
Keys.
Maddie pulled her father's hefty key ring out of her pocket and set about methodically trying every key. Brewster asked,
Man, what's Dad got all those keys for?
I know, right? And some of them are really weird. This one's glowing. This one's made of glass. Here's an iron one like from a cartoon dungeon. After trying almost every key, one finally fit. With noticeable pride, she said,
Okay, that's the one. Now, let's see if you're right.
Just open it.
She turned the handle and pulled the door open.